This is week one of the 7 week metta course I've been talking about, and I want to start by mentioning that the form that I'm te teaching is actually quite old. I didn't know this until quite recently, actually. I was on retreat and one of the teachers mentioned this, and I went, oh. So there's a text called the Vishuddhimagga, which is a codification of practices of Buddhism that was written about 2,000 years ago. So 500 years after after the Buddha had passed away. But the thing about that time is that by 500 years after that, Buddhism was sort of getting scattered. There was these different things happening in different traditions and different forms, and someone decided, let's write all this down and formalize it. This is like it's like a practice manual in some senses, okay, very detailed practice manual. And one of the things they did in this book, the Vishuddhimagga, is they laid out this very precise way how you could progressively deepen your practice of metta. And that form of practice is still being taught today, 2,000 years later, particularly in Thailand and Burma, but also very much now in the West. And so that's the how I learned how to practice metta. And so that's what I'm going to be teaching. I'm saying this all because some of you may have encountered other ways of practicing metta. And what I'm going to ask you to do is just sort of put those aside. Let them rest and try out this form and see what happens over the next 7 weeks, and then you can figure it out. The thing about metta is there's lots of different ways you could practice it. This is just, I don't want to use the word official, like the formal method as taught in the West in particular. So the whole idea of this formal system is to actually take people one at a time, or and often that person is a symbol of a much larger group. And these people, as we learn how to practice with them, get progressively more difficult to work with. So we start with what is theoretically the simplest person. Simplest person being ourself. And all of a sudden, some of you are going, wait a second. Because for some people, practicing with yourself is actually quite difficult for a variety of reasons I'll talk about later. But really, what this practice is about is developing the habit of having a heart full of loving kindness and radiating it out into the world. That's actually in the words of the Metta Sutta, this is a line that says, radiating kindness over the entire world. But so what the practice is going to do is sort of progressively expand our people that we're focusing on, or the categories of people we're focusing on, until we really are radiating kindness over the entire world. So it's a progressive system, starting with the self. And the thing is, especially in the West, this idea of having thoughts of loving kindness for yourself before you take care of all those other people, right? It's like, oh no, I'm supposed to be, taking care of my friends and my family and my parents and my kids, and I should be taking care of everybody else. And then I'm sort of come at the end of the line in a sense. But the truth is, we start with self, because if you can't have feelings of loving kindness for yourself, it's very difficult to have feelings of loving kindness for anyone else. And I'm going to go into that in a fair amount of detail. But this is based on the teaching of the Buddha. This idea of starting from self. This is from the Samyutta Nikaya, and it's there's a section here where they've gathered together sort of famous verses that the Buddha taught are used to explain things, and it's part of it. Usually, there's a little story, and then there's the verse. And this is King Pasenadi and his queen Mallika are having a discussion, right? And this is there, Mallika, anyone more dear to you than yourself? It's the king asking the queen, right? There is no one, great king, more dear to me than myself. But is there anyone, great king, more dear to you than yourself? For me too, Mallika, there is no one more dear than myself. And it sends tremors through the world of like, oh my God, how could they be so selfish, right? So and Mallika is sort of feeling like that, and so the king and the queen go off to see the Buddha, who's near the palace. Having approached, he paid homage to the Blessed One, sat down to one side, and related to the Blessed One his conversation with Queen Mallika. Then the Blessed One, having understood the meaning of this, on that occasion recited this verse. Having traversed all quarters of the mind, one finds none anywhere dearer than oneself. Likewise, each person holds himself most dear. Hence, one who loves himself should not harm others. So what the Buddha is saying is, if we truly have love for ourself, if we truly feel that in the true sense, not in the sort of syrupy sense, but in the true sense of loving kindness, then we see that just as I want to have that feeling, everyone in the world needs it. Everybody in the world needs this feeling. But there's no exception to people who want this and need to feel this. It sort of wakes us up to this sense of the universality of people feeling the need to be loved and to feel love, to express love. So how do we do this? Well, I'll take a while to explain this, but I mean, it starts. The idea here is, remember, this is a meditation practice, and all meditation practices have what's called a meditation object, something that we use to focus the mind. And some practices, the object is very simple. Any form of mantra practice is like this. Any form of visualization practice is like this. And in the case of metta, in this form, there's a set of phrases, and we basically, the idea is we repeat these phrases over and over and over and over. So it takes great concentration to be able to keep those phrases in the mind to the exclusion of everything else. Very quickly, the phrases: may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with ease. And when you think about this, think of what it would mean if you always felt safe, happy, healthy, and at ease. This means to have enough in the world that you don't have to struggle. This is like describing, may you have, or may I have, the ideal conditions for practice, or for living a life, for that matter. And the danger is, when you look at that list, feeling safe, happy, healthy, and at ease, that if we're not careful, we get caught in the, I don't deserve that. Or, I should be more concerned with others and instead of trying to feel that way for myself. And this, for some people, is the struggle of doing this practice at the beginning, is you have to understand, just as the Buddha said in this book, you absolutely deserve, without question, to feel safe, happy, healthy, and at ease, just like everyone else, every being in the world, without exception, deserves this. And that's like kind of, when you think about it, like, wow, that's pretty mind-blowing. I mean, when I first started realizing that, I was like, wow, that's like, everyone deserves this. And think of how few people actually get it all, right? And it doesn't mean that you're going to be happy all the time, because we go through cycles. Even when you feel safe and happy and healthy and live at ease, there's going to be times when you're grumpy. There's going to be times when you're out of sorts. There's going to be times when something bothers you. So it's not like you're going to live this perfectly calm, pure life. But it's like, let's have the conditions such that the opportunity to be, have the mind still and focused and clear and full of thoughts of love and kindness towards everyone is likely. And so the next thing about these phrases, these are the suggested phrases translated from the original Pali. Very brief, very to the point. But now I'm going to tell you that, but when people practice metta, people do all kinds of interesting things with these phrases. Okay? So for instance, may I be safe sometimes turns into, may I be safe from inner and outer harm. Being a little more precise about what it means for you to feel safe. May I be happy? I had a teacher who said she could never say, may I be happy. It seemed too greedy to her. So she said, but she was quite fine with, may I be content, which is a form of happiness that's sort of not so grasping from her point of view. And so when she did metta, she used the phrase, may I be content, instead of may I be happy. On the other hand, when I was practicing metta intensely, I decided to really go for it. And my phrase was, may I be happy, filled with joy. Why not? So everyone, you see where I'm going. Oh, may I be healthy. This can be difficult for people who maybe their health isn't so great. So maybe that phrase becomes, may I be as healthy as I can be. Something that accepts the fact that I'm not in perfect health. So it's okay over, even tonight or just over the next while, to take, play with these phrases. But we want to make sure we cover these four areas, because these are the four areas that if we have all of these things, that it's good, right? I want to be safe. I want to be happy or content. I want to be healthy, and I want to live with ease. And live with ease is another one where people think, oh, it's greedy, but it's not like I want a wonderful life with a big mansion. It's like, may I just have enough that I don't struggle? May I have enough that I don't struggle in the world? That's what living with ease implies here. You know, just give me a simple life. Yeah. Okay. So how do we practice? And we're gonna start soon, but I wanted to make sure you understand all this. First of all, we're just gonna keep repeating the phrases. So you have to remember the four phrases and say them in the same order. Steady. And for any particular practice session, it's just if you're starting to already think about experimenting with what exact words you're going to use. For any particular session of practice, always use the same phrases. Don't sort of partway through think, oh, maybe I should be saying this, you know, because what, now you've just gotten distracted, right? Remember, this is a meditation practice that requires concentration. So you pick a set of phrases. These are the phrases I'm going to use this time. Try them out, take them for a test drive. And then over the next week or so, you're going to come up with a version that suits you for now. And these, it also changes over time. So that's part one. Be able to repeat these phrases takes concentration, mental concentration, focus. Second part of the practice, equally important to repeating the phrases, is having some image in your mind of who you're saying the phrases for. So in this case, you have this image in your mind of yourself at some happy time when you actually felt safe, happy, healthy, and at ease, or as close to that as you've ever felt, perhaps. So you have the phrases repeating, and you're at the same time holding this image in the mind of you at some in some place at some time that connects you in the sense of that's what it was like. That image I have of myself, that's what it was, that's how I was at that time when I felt these things very strongly. Now, here's yet another very slight variation. Particularly for self, I have found in my own practice, I had real problems visualizing myself. I could visualize other people, but I think it's maybe, I was talking to a teacher about this a couple of weeks ago when I was on retreat. I said, I think that part of it is just, I don't see myself a lot. You know, I'm not one for lingering in front of the mirror. You know, I haven't actually shaved with a razor for 40 years, except one little brief period when my kids freaked out when I shaved my beard off and they didn't recognize me. I've always just had fuzz, right? So you don't have to stand in front of the mirror every day and do it. So I have no real conception in mentally of, I don't hold a clear image of myself. That was my excuse anyway when I said I talked to my teacher about this, and there's a phrase in the Satipatthana Sutta that it's basically says just see yourself as clear, just have a sense of yourself as completely as you can. Just one way of meditating is to have this image. Not of not visual image, but a tactile sense of what it feels like to be in this body. You know, the phrase is in the Satipatthana Sutta is there is a body. If I can just be aware as I'm repeating these phrases that there is a body that represents, or there's a group of sensations that represent that sense of I in this particular case. Trying to be fairly precise here. And it's for me, this works really well. So if you have trouble seeing yourself, try and feel yourself instead. Okay. And then the last thing you want to do is have really sort of think about this. This is a little contemplation, especially at the beginning of every practice. And there's a little contemplation that goes, what do these phrases mean for me? What does it mean for me to feel safe? You know, I'm a 6'4", 225-pound guy. What it means for me to feel safe might be very different than for someone else. And that's just the truth of the world, right? And other people have other issues about safety other than just size, but that's just my an example that I can use because it's I relate to it that way. I've never had too much problem feeling safe being out in the world. You know, no one's gonna pick on this big galoot. I mean, basically. Sorry. And maybe I'm deluding myself, but that was sort of the feeling I have anyway. So it means something different for me than for other people. May I be happy? Well, what does happy mean for me? What does it mean for me to be happy? And once again, everybody's going to have a different sort of set of issues around that and how they feel about it. As I mentioned, may I be healthy might mean well for me, you know, my body's getting a bit worn out, and for me to be healthy means I wake up in the morning and I can still stand up when I get out of bed. That's being pretty healthy as far as I'm, but that's how I feel sometimes, right? And other people, it's like, can I still run my 10K every day? That's a different healthy. So everybody has their own sense of that as well. And then finally, may I live with ease? Once again, what does that mean? Does it, I mean, I live a pretty simple lifestyle, and I'm fine with what I have. I don't have any big financial worries. That means I'm living at ease as far as I'm concerned. For other people, it might mean something totally different. So we have to tune into what these phrases mean, because that'll help us connect to the practice. It helps keep the practice not turn into just dry repetition. Say the words, blah, blah, blah. Which it can if you're not careful. Want to read a couple of things here. So I'm talking more tonight than I will on some other nights, just because I really want to introduce this. This is Sharon Salzberg talking about this issue of choosing self as where you start. This is from her book, Loving Kindness. The practice of metta, uncovering the force of love that can uproot fear, anger, guilt, begins with befriending ourselves. The foundation of metta practice is to know how to be your own friend. According to the Buddha, you can search through the entire universe for someone who is more deserving. It's that quote I mentioned earlier. How few of us embrace ourselves in this way. With metta practice, we uncover the possibility of truly respecting ourselves. We discover, as Walt Whitman put it, "I am larger and better than I thought. I did not think I held so much goodness." Directly seeing the natural radiance of our minds reteaches us our own loveliness. That's a classic Sharon Salzberg statement, right? In fact, I'm going to read it again because I love it. Directly seeing the natural radiance of our minds reteaches us our own loveliness. Confidence in our innate potential to be loving human beings empowers the cultivation of metta. Our potential to love is very real and is somehow not destroyed, no matter what we experience. All the mistakes that we might make, all the times we've been caught in reaction, all of the times we have caused pain, all the times we have suffered. Throughout everything, our potential to love remains intact and pure. Through practicing metta in meditation and in daily life, we cultivate this potential. Love joins with our intention as partners in healing ourselves and the world. In some ways, our greatest ally in this practice is love of our wish to be happy. This wish functions as a homing instinct for freedom that we can unite in it with understanding what actually brings us happiness. But sometimes we may feel that we do not really deserve happiness. We may almost feel ashamed of wanting it. Yet this wish is one of the finest things about us, opening the door to transcending our limited lives. Just pointing to how important this is. And at the same time, I'm sure, because I've gone back and forth and been caught in this space, oh, this seems so greedy. Want me first? This seems odd, right? It's like it's so not what our culture teaches us. We're supposed to take care of other people, right? I teach this practice to nurses at the hospital sometimes, and for them this is like such a shocking thing to, because I mean their whole outlook in the whole time they're working is, this is how I'm supposed to be taking care of these other people. And for them to pause and think, oh, I got to take care of myself, is like a radical thought for some of these people, but it's really true. one other piece of wisdom. This is from Kevin Griffin's book. This is another book I love. It's called Living Kindness. Instead of loving kindness, he calls it living kindness because he's talking about how to actually put this into our lives. So the challenge of practicing loving, or indeed living kindness, starts with the very first step in the process, sending love to yourself. Many people find this an intimidating order, but I think that difficulty results from another misunderstanding of metta. You don't earn metta by being good or nice. You don't get metta points for being generous or selfless. Metta isn't really a part of the karmic economy. It's more of a birthright. I'll come back to that idea. Here are two reasons to give metta to yourself. It's hard to give love to others if you don't give it to yourself, and your heart longs for love. When it comes to loving others, it makes sense that if our feelings towards ourselves are unkind, any effort to be kind to others will be adulterated. These efforts will always be colored by some form of neediness. These efforts will always be colored, either we will be trying to get validation from others or trying to compensate for our lack of self-worth by being extra good. These external efforts will never succeed as long as our inner world feels barren. And it's that very barren feeling that makes us think we don't deserve love. We look inside and see anxiety and sadness, worry and stress and irritation and judgment. Then we equate feeling bad with being bad. It's a sentence we have to really take to heart. We equate feeling bad with being bad. In this formulation, if we are bad, then clearly we don't deserve love. Instead of self-judgment, metta encourages us to care for ourselves simply because we are suffering. To be kind to the sadness and worry. To be gentle with the judgment and irritation. We actually give love to those very feelings. Rather than fighting with our inner life, we open to it with acceptance and compassion. It's just a whole different way of looking at it, at what we're doing with this practice. We're giving love to the things that we don't like about ourselves. Pretty radical thing to do, huh? So here's the practice that we're about to start. You want to be able to repeat the phrases. So if you haven't already and you want to, go ahead and just write down the phrases so you can peek at them if you forget. Because what happens is as you get into this, you start getting, oh, which, you know, your mind wanders. What a surprise. It's like any other meditation form. Your mind's going to wander. And then you go, what was the next phrase? And you start switching. I had a real problem with switching happy and healthy when I was practicing formally for intense periods of time. I would forget which one came first and which one came afterwards. And so I had, but you'll quickly get over that. But especially if you've never done this before, it's helpful to have those phrases written down so you can, open your eyes and peek once in a while if you need to. The other thing is understand that just like any other form of meditation, where we're choosing a particular meditation object, we'll stay with that meditation object for a while, and then the mind's going to wander. And when the mind wanders, if you got to, may I be safe, may I be happy, and then you blah 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 blah, and you go, oh wait, I'm meditating. You remember, very important, and then you go, where was I in the phrases? Don't even think that thought. Just start again. Start with the four phrases and start all over again. Just begin at the beginning. Much easier. If this problem of wandering mind occurs, seems to be very intrusive, stop practicing completely Go back to thinking about what those phrases mean for you. Because the more you tune into the meaning of the phrases as you're saying them, the more likely it is that they're going to mean something and you're going to stay more focused. One last thing. That somehow, and this, we get this idea that when I do metta practice, I should get this sort of sweet, smiley feeling. I should just be like flowing with this sweet feeling. Sorry. This may happen, but it's just as likely not. And it will depend on your mood, and it'll tend to, I mean, and you might get it sometimes and not other times. Or it might never really become that powerful in terms of the actual, you don't feel your heart bursting with love and joy. Don't worry about that at all. Absolutely don't even spend 1 second worrying about it. Because what you're doing, think about what we're doing when we're actually repeating these phrases. We're filling the mind with wholesome thoughts. These are all wholesome thoughts towards ourselves and later to other people. And if you're filling your mind with wholesome thoughts, two things are happening. One, you're not having unwholesome thoughts. So we're changing our habitual pattern of mind to which tends towards the unwholesome more often than we care to admit, to being this is I'm just going to have my mind full of wholesome thoughts. I'm going to choose consciously, set the intention to fill my mind with wholesome thoughts. This, in and of itself, is a very powerful effect on the mind over time. And the other thing, I'll read this section from Sharon later with this, but Sharon uses this image of planting seeds. It's like every time we say these phrases, we're planting the seeds for loving kindness to become more our default mode when we interact in the world. We're planting seeds. We're planting the seeds because we've set the intention to do so. If you plant seeds in the mind and heart, these seeds will guaranteed come to fruition. It's just the laws of nature taking over. You plant seeds and they come to fruition. And it might be they come to fruition while you're sitting there and you get this really sweet feeling. And it might be, who knows when those seeds will blossom, but they will blossom. And this practice, I'm speaking from my own personal life, really changes how you interact with others in the world over time. I'll tell you one funny story. The first time I did this practice intensely, I went on a month-long retreat and I just did nothing but metta from like 5 in the morning to 9 at night for a month. Very interesting sort of immersion process, right? And I was really interested in the concentration aspects of the practice, which it is very powerful concentration practice, and I got quite deeply concentrated. But it was like, that warm, gushy stuff. I don't know. I can sort of, I understand what they're talking about, but I wasn't, didn't sort of feel it, right? And then I got home, and a couple of days after I've been away for a month, I'm sort of landed now. I'm going to go to Whole Foods and do a little shopping. So I got a little list of like 9 things on my little list. I'm going to zip into Whole Foods and get my stuff and get out of there so I don't have to interact with too much with other people because I'm still feeling kind of delicate after a month in silence. But I get into Whole Foods, it's like 11 in the morning, something like that. I don't know if you've ever been in Whole Foods at 11 in the morning, but that's the time when all the people with little kids go because it isn't so crowded, right? And I kept encountering, as I was going up and down the aisles, ticking things off my list and putting them in my basket, I kept encountering all these little kids with their parents. And every time I came to some little kid, it was like, I'm just going to hang out with this kid. Kid, little 2 year and 3 year olds are like full of love and joy. They're full of this stuff. It's just sort of natural. It hasn't been beaten out of them yet, right? And I would just tune in and I'd make silly faces and just hang out with these kids. And the amazing thing was every one of those kids tuned into me and was totally cool with the fact that this weird old guy was like doing Google Eyes with them and stuff. And every one of the parents was perfectly cool with the fact that I was doing this, that this strange man was hanging out with their kids and being kind of crazy. And it took me like 35 or 40 minutes to get 9 things at Whole Foods, okay? Because I ended up stopping and having these wonderful encounters with kids and parents, I suppose. And I think I left, I said, I sort of had this thought arise in the mind. It was like, oh, that's what they meant about having, that sort of sweet feeling. That's what was going on with me. I was just like this. I was radiating kindness over the entire world, or at least the entire world of Whole Foods at 11 in the morning. It was like astonishing to me that that's what had happened. And because I wasn't aware of it happening while it was happening, I planted the seeds very diligently, and there they were in the bread aisle at Whole Foods blossoming. Who knows? You don't know at all. You haven't got a clue. This is what this is. It works. It really works. And the more I practice it, because I've done other times of intense practice in this, it's just accumulates. Okay. Practice time. So what I'd like to do now, and this is also, since people are listening to this on recording, at this point, I'm going to turn off the recording when I finish this little bit of instruction. So if you just listen to this as a recording, then just practice. And then when you finish practice, turn the recording back on and I'll have a few more things to say at the end. So that's how these particular recordings are going to work for people who want to do these instructions online without having to listen to me constantly talk to them, except online. Okay, so here's the plan. We're going to sit for about, how are we doing? Oh my God, 20 minutes or so. We're just going to give this 20 minutes. So the first, especially for some of you who've never done this before, I'm just going to say 20 minutes, and you're going to, number one, repeat the phrases, whatever phrases you've chosen to use tonight. You're going to, before you actually start repeating, I'll give you the instructions to tune into the meaning of the phrases. And you're also going to get that image or that tactile sense of I, an image of yourself at a happy time, or just the physical sensation of, put those sensations together. There is a body. Tune into that as a way to connect. So we have these three things going on all the time. We have the phrases, but we also have the image, and we have the meaning of the phrases. These are equally important. We want to somehow put all that together. Having said that, different people lean more into one of those than the other. Some people are much more concerned about having the image and less concerned about the phrases. They sort of take care of themselves after a while. Other people, it's the phrases themselves that really they tune into. Other people, it's the meaning. It's all okay. It's just that we have to have little bits of all of that. It's a recipe, but the amounts of each of these three ingredients are different for everyone. And also, as I found, different at various times in my life, in my practice life. So don't be rigid about it. Just see what happens. Okay. So let's just sit. I'll lead us into this, and then I'll turn off my bike and we'll just sit. So you're sitting up comfortably. It's very important that when you practice metta that you feel comfortable. Doesn't mean slouching. You still want to be alert and awake. This is meditation. But it isn't like you don't ever want to feel rigid or, sort of, this isn't zazen, okay? We're not going there. We want to be comfortable. It's pretty hard to feel happiness and love for yourself when you're uncomfortable at the same time. So there's a little more stress on being comfortable, and a little less stress on being upright and fierce, perhaps. And then think about the phrases and think about what those phrases mean for you. What does it mean to be safe, happy, healthy, and at ease? Get a real sense of that. And at the same time, bring that image of yourself, that tune into that image or that tactile feeling of self. Get it really clearly as best you can in the mind and the heart. It's like you're holding yourself in your heart. And then you just start repeating the phrases. Don't rush with the phrases. You say a phrase, take a little pause, let it sink in, and then say the next phrase. So, may I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Whatever phrases you're using. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And just keep saying the phrases to yourself. So now, I'd like to do two things. One is I'd like to leave space for questions, but the other thing I'd like to do is get some sense of how that went for, especially for people who've never done metta practice before or aren't familiar with this. What was this like? How did it go? Could you actually stay with the phrases? Could you keep the image? What worked? What didn't? Just share with me, or anything else that, just how did it feel in the broadest sense of the word to practice in this way? So all you need to do is, if you want to say something, ask a question, or just have a little sharing time, just turn on your mic and go right ahead. And, if two people turn on the mic at the same second, I'll referee. But other than that, just go right ahead. Don't be shy.
Yeah, Barry, thank you very much. I do practice metta, and I do use the same phrases that you use. I learned them from you. But I'd never really spent any time thinking about what they meant. That was a bit of a revelation for me. What exactly does it mean to be feel safe? I mean, I usually, when I do metta, I usually will do it because I'm feeling, become aware that I'm feeling down, or especially down on myself or something, but I never really thought of it in terms of fear so much, metta and when I'm afraid. So, and I only got to really only that one, I thought a little bit about what happiness means, but I really spent most of my time thinking about what it means to feel safe. It's very interesting. Thank you.
It's the interesting thing, when I talked with the Metta Sutta a month or so ago, I mentioned that the original teaching of the Metta Sutta, the Buddha's teachings on love and kindness, were to help the Sangha get over their fear. This is metta is about getting over fear, because out of fear arise most other unwholesome, difficult emotions like anger. We're afraid of something, then we get angry about it, or we get anxious about it. And it's so that's what this is about. And so feeling safe is like, wow, to feel safe, what would that be like? It's an interesting thing. And here's one more interesting thing. As we go through this and we sort of start directing this at other people, then we have to start thinking, what does that mean for them? So it might mean something totally different for this person you're focusing on than for you. And that's also a place, interesting place to explore. What I like on this retreat, they talked a lot about metta. And one thing someone said, and I really struck me because I never thought of it that before, is the phrases, the image, and the sense of what these things mean are all equally important. And when we practice, we have to sort of somehow keep all of that together. And it makes it more powerful, makes those seeds we're planting go deeper into the ground. But thank you for your mention of the importance of thinking of what those things mean, because it makes a big difference. Other thoughts, other comments, other questions? Carl's being
Hi.
brave. Oh, hi, Marcia.
Hi. So yes, I focused. I mean, I could write a thesis about every word. I focused just on the first one. May I be safe? Because I've never felt safe in my life. I've actually come here from Israel 2 months ago. I was there on the 7th of October. I'm Jewish. My whole life, I've never felt safe. So I always feel like I always add safe and secure, because it's just to say safe is not enough. It's not weighty enough. I need safe and secure. I don't know why, but it gives it more of a weight. That's it. I mean, I could say happy. I don't feel I deserve happy, so I just say it like rote. I mean, maybe I should try content, which you mentioned before. Healthy is healthy. I mean, we all want to be healthy. And live with ease, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I don't mean I don't know what that means, but it's kind of feels, we say in Yiddish, parva, like it's bland. I like the term peace and quiet, so I would replace that with peace and quiet, but
So here's a suggestion. Two suggestions. One is, you said you don't feel like you deserve to be happy. Explore that a little bit, because you do absolutely deserve to be happy. Everyone deserves to be happy without exception, really. And you have to really make this practice powerful in the world. That's something you have to really sort of take in. And I'm not saying you should take it in instantly, but give yourself some space to allow that, because everybody deserves it. And as far as may I live with ease, I know someone who said they didn't like the phrasing of that either. And they said, my phrase was, may I have enough, which is the intent of it. May I have enough of whatever it is I need to live at ease. Whether may I have, it could be, may I have enough stuff, but that's sort of too colloquial almost. But I mean, you see what I'm heading towards. We don't want to leave that out. The four phrases and the meaning of the four phrases are important. We should, as much as we can in this traditional form I'm teaching, stick with all four of those phrases.
Can I ask something? I felt, may I be safe? So I felt, may I feel safe, felt more potent to me, but I don't
Perfectly
know if
good.
it's just.
Perfectly good. I mean, like I said, these phrases are ultimately customizable in the sense of the wording you use for any one of these four thoughts is up to you. Like, when you say, may I feel safe and secure, perfectly good. Perfectly good phrase. If you identify with that, that's a perfect phrase for you. Perfectly good. No problem with that at all. It's that when people start thinking, oh, I don't want to have all four of these phrases. I only want two of the four. That's when I start, because part of the power of this practice is to keep those four phrases going and keep them in order and keep them clear in the mind. It takes concentration. And part of this practice is about learning how to concentrate. It's part of the traditional practice. Make sense?
Yes. So you're saying, I mean, I have experience with this. I've years in Israel, belonged to the Insight Meditation Group, organization. Then we have a very strong organization group, and now they're even very intensely working harder considering the situation there. So I'm customizing them immediately, and that's okay, right?
That perfectly all right. Absolutely. I mean, yes, I want to make it really clear. This you have the more you can make this practice personal, something that resonates with you, the better it's going to be. So if you change all the phrases, as long as the four areas that those phrases cover are covered in your versions of those phrases, and you have an order and you stick with that order, perfect practice. Perfect practice.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Barry.
Other thoughts, questions, comments?
Yeah, thank you, Barry. Yeah, I just want to say two things. First is, yeah, that's probably the longest I've been able to stick with like a single object of meditation, ever. I've never done this practice before. I'm shocked how little my mind wanders because it was so preoccupied with trying to like interpret what these, phrases mean to me. So that was a surprise. And the second thing I'll say is, yeah, I just wanted to second what Carl said, which is, yeah, I've never really thought almost at all about what it means to be safe. And I was trying to like remember a time where I felt like feeling of being safe. It just occurs to me that like, well, when I'm safe, I'm just not thinking about it, right? And so I almost had to think about it in terms of opposites, right? Like I know what it means to feel unsafe. And so I just had to think, well, not that.
That whatever works. This is a practice of whatever works. That as long as we stay within the range of the what's going on here. If that's how you work with feeling safe, is to think what it means to be not safe. Perfect practice.
Maybe I could add on to that since we're already unmuted. So I really love metta, so thank you for teaching this, but I find it like, so I'm like actually thinking about something in metta. Like I'm thinking about what X phrase means to me, and I'm very concentrated on that one thing, but it's like, how do I tell the difference between being distracted thinking about one of these things and like being mindful and concentrated?
Very good question. Very good question. The advice I've heard often, and it seems to work, is always at the beginning of a particular practice period, spend a little bit of time. What does that mean? Well, half a minute, a minute, depends on who you are and how well you like to contemplate, I suppose. But spend some time thinking about the meanings of the phrases. And then sort of keep that vibe, but not spend much time actually thinking about them and more time saying them.
Okay, interesting.
And then if your mind's getting distracted and you're wandering, the advice is to go back and do that again. Go back to the contemplation period, because it's having a sense of the meaning of those phrases is a really strong, I don't want to use the word incentive, but I think it's probably the correct word. It's like a very strong energy that keeps you repeating the phrases, having that understanding of what they mean for you.
Yeah, and I would assume like over time, like you get a better sense of what each thing means to you. So you have to spend less time thinking about it initially. Is that correct? Like, or.
Yeah, except that, the meaning of all these things change over time, like everything else. And so it might be, we have to be careful. Then they go, well, I know what that means. Because it might be like, just before you sat, maybe you had this weird incident with some weird guy in Whole Foods, and you didn't, and now you're not feeling so safe right now. I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm just making that up. But it's like, you don't know. What so you, at that point, may I feel safe might mean something very different from what it normally means for you. So we're always paying attention to, what's going on in our world around us. And then tuning into what those things mean.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
So, if, giving a little pause here in case someone else who's thinking about saying something is actually going to say something. If not, I will continue on with other things. Oh, go ahead, Elise.
Hi, thank you, Barry. I have also done some meta. It's not usually my go-to, but I have found in other times that I naturally do or am able to customize the phrases. But this time, as I started to customize, I almost got too carried away with, like, how am I going to customize this? What does this look like to me tonight? And I was like, okay, wait, just say the phrases simply. That's it, nothing else. And that kind of helped me get back on track and kind of through that saw how they all contributed to each other in a way.
Yeah.
Of that sense of well-being, like being safe means also being happy. Like they sort of are interchangeable. I was having more of a difficult time visualizing. I seem to either say the phrases in my head, or if I'm meditating, like only be visualizing. I couldn't quite get them to happen at the same time.
Takes practice. And
yeah.
And as I said, for me, I had real problems with visualizing, so I shifted to that body sense thing because I'm, you know, a mindfulness practitioner, right? It's easy to have a body sense. And that worked better for me. So you have to sort of, once again, but we can't just, okay, all I'm going to do is have this image, because now you're losing the complete. And it may be that, you know, you have the image, but now the phrases aren't being said, you know, may I be safe, may I be happy, but maybe every 10 seconds you drop in one of the phrases but keep the concentration going by keeping it in order, and maybe less phrases, less frequent phrases, and more image. But don't forget that we got to keep the phrases going too. Keep that balance of all three.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Another significant pause for one more person to speak if they want to. Don't feel obliged at all, by the way. I don't want to make people feel like I should be speaking. It's never the case. So I've got two things on my notes here. One is to read this poem, but before that I got a big note that says, homework. This is a course. You have homework. Your homework is, even if you normally practice mindfulness that's your regular daily practice, just practice metta instead. Just let the mindfulness go, the formal mindfulness practice. And just practice metta for the next 6 weeks and see what happens. It's really interesting when you just do this practice. And by the way, think about what I said about when the mind wanders, you have to remember, oh wait, that's a mindfulness instruction. This practice requires a great deal of mindfulness as well, to keep the self, keep it all going, and remember to keep all the pieces going and not let the mind wander too much. That's mindfulness. It just happens to look different. And there's probably less emphasis on mindfulness and more emphasis on heart opening. But those two practices are very integrally related to each other. So, but my advice would be, if you can do it, is just to do metta practice. And whether that's 10 minutes a day, because that's what your practice is, or it's whatever, however long your daily practice is. If you practice twice in a day, because some people do that, then you can do metta one day and mindfulness the other, one time and mindfulness the other time. I know people that do that as well. But just sort of give it this practice a chance to sort of go deep into it and see what happens. It's interesting when you do. So that's your homework. Practice, practice, practice. That's not this is a poem I found. This is from Mary Oliver's book, 1,000 Mornings. It's called The Poem of the One World. This morning, the beautiful white heron was floating along above the water, and then into the sky of this, the one world we all belong to. For everything, sooner or later, is part of everything else. Which thought made me feel, for a little while, quite beautiful myself. Sounds like loving kindness for self to me, but in the context of the whole world. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the endless suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere.